Hi, and welcome to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Afa Michael Weaver. Afa Michael Weaver is alumni professor of English at Simmons College in Boston. He is the author of 10 books of poetry, including My Father's Geography and Timber and Prayer, as well as short fiction and plays. He has been named a Pew Fellow in poetry and the first elder of Cave Canem, and he was the first African-American poet to hold the poet-in-residence position at the Stadler Poetry Center at Bucknell University. His new book from the University of Pittsburgh Press is entitled The Plum Flower Dance, Poems 1985 to 2005. And he's here visiting from Boston. And hi, Michael, how are you?
Hi, Jan. Nice to be here.
It's really great to see you again. As a lot of people will know out there, you gave a great reading at the AWP conference in Chicago last year that made people cry, including me. And and so it's really great to have you here. So you're going to read from The Plum Flower Dance.
Yes, I'll read from that.
Okay.
I'll start with a bop poem. Rambling in Lewisburg Federal Penitentiary. In general population, census is consensus. Ain't nowhere to run to in these walls, walls like a mine. We visitors stand in a yellow circle so the tower can frisk us with light, finger the barrels on thirsty rifles. I got rambling, rambling on my mind. In general population, madness runs swift through the river changing, changing in hearts, men tacked in their chairs, resigned to hope we weave into air, talking this and talking that. And one brother asks, tell us how to get these things they got, these houses, these cars. We want the real revolution, things. I got rambling on my mind. In the yellow circle, the night stops like a boy shot running from a Ruger 9mm carrying 44 Magnum shells. A sister crying in the glass booth to love's law, to violence of backs bent over to the raw libido of men cracking, cracking, crack. I got rambling, rambling on my mind. Thelonious for Jean F. Thomas. After Thelonious Monk. It's as if you are given the sky to carry, lift it on your shoulders and take it to lunch, sit in McDonald's with it weighing you down, this business of being black, of staying black until the darkness of some eternity kisses you. Birth gives you something other folk thank God for not having, or else they pray for it, to have its gift of a body inclined to touch, inclined to sing. Yet they will not give back to God the paleness of being able to touch absolute power. They envy only for so long as being black, as being bound to danger. Among us there are masters like Monk, who understood the left-hand stride on a brick. In his rapturous dance beside the piano, he was connected to knowing the scratch and slide of the shoes leaving the ground, the shoes of the lynched men. He carried this thing that we are, as the mystic he was, reveling in its magic, respectful of its anger, mute and unchanged as the hate and envy surround us. One day we learn there is no sky above this trapped air around the earth. The sky is but a puff of smoke from this giant head smoking a lucky strike, pretending not to know the truce. We learn sometimes in this life, sometimes in what comes after, where there is really nothing but everything we never knew. We learn in silence the dance Monk knew. We find secrets for pulling the million arrows from our souls each time we move to sleep, to forget that we are both jewel and jetsam, wanted and unforgiven. My Heart for L. If ever they trace the lines of my chest with ink as you trace them with your tongue, kiss me first. Hold my tongue to yours, pull it until it goes numb. Paste your lips to mine until I can taste your birth. If ever they open me and the bluebirds come rushing out, I want to hear you sing in the flutter of wings. This is the way things are healed. This is how the tired travelers gaze into the eye to be sustained. And when the blood goes rushing away from me like children who have opened a forbidden spout, touch something of mine. Hold me that way to know that I want to hold you more than life itself, but a choice must be made. Some vinegar must go where agony cries out already enough. I hang in the tiny crochet and feeble hands as they give me a stranger's heart. If all of this is just a dream and you fly away from me before the gray takes over, I will touch you everywhere I go. I will declare the world your body and christen our children in the air of names.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Afa Michael Weaver. He's reading from his new book, The Plum Flower Dance, which was published by University of Pittsburgh Press. Michael, you talked about the first poem as being a bop poem. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little about what that is and how you came up with that? Didn't you invent the bop poem?
I did invent the bop poem. It was 1997, and I was teaching at Cave Canem before I was made the first elder. And it was a very lively and energetic time. And we were so full of joy and celebration. And I thought, well, maybe I'll just invent a form as an exercise for the workshop. And I had no idea that it would become what it has become. There are bops all over the place, and it's gone beyond Cave Canem, and people who are not Cave Canem affiliates are teaching the bop form. It's been translated into Japanese, and so I'm just amazed at that. But I was inspired by the blues form, and it has a three-part structure that's process-oriented, and it was designed to make an initial statement or complaint, to process it, a kind of a triadic kind of movement, 1, 2, 3 through the poem, with refrains drawn from popular music, which can be a little problematic in terms of copyright, but the one that I read has a Robert Johnson song from which I take the lyric. I got rambling on my mind. Mm-hmm. Rambling. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Nice. You know, in one of the poems you read, there's a phrase, the wanted and the unforgiven. And when I heard that, it made me think of all of your work. I mean, I feel like there's a lot of wanting in your work and there's a lot of unforgiven running through your work. And I don't know if you think that rings true for you, but as soon as you said that, I was thinking, yeah, that seems to be primary in a lot of your poems in one way or another.
Yeah, the quality of being unforgiven, I should just say where my mind goes with that. It goes to film, and of course it goes to Clint Eastwood's Western by that same title. But it goes there because I identify with characters who are working out of some kind of trauma and who are caught in coping strategies that haven't always been good for him. In his case, he became an assassin, you know. But there is the idea of how do you take the roughness of life and make something beautiful out of it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And I love that you have, you know, such a range of subject in your work. You know, you have poems about prison, you have poems about incest, you have, and then you have poems focused on art, you know, on visual art and more classical material. Can you talk a little bit about the choices of that range in your work?
It's, I've always worked to go to the next place. And I'm teaching, or I'm using Fences by August Wilson this semester in my drama class. And there's a line there where Bono, I believe, is saying his father was always searching out the new land, or there were these men who were searching out the new land. And I've always looked to extend my work and to push it in directions that I felt that I have not gone into, and to even go across cultural borders into Jewish culture, into Chinese culture. It's been an exploration of myself as well as an exploration of the world. So I have gone many places, and it's like, and the people who live in the places where I go open their door and say, "Oh, well, who are you?" I was like, "It's me. I'm Afa." Hello.
Okay. Could you read more poems,
sure,
you think?
Sure. For a very good friend, recently passed away. Sup Shop Girl, for James Eddie Mann. She is lovely. Her eyes are big almonds floating over the electronic cash register. She puts magic dust in my mayonnaise, hoochie-coochie notes in my fries. There is no other reason to order tomatoes, lettuce, hot peppers, onions, and French fries in a suit and tie. I come nearer the shop tiptoeing in floor shimes. With a quarter, I set the mood on the jukebox. "What do you want today?" she asks. "What is it, baby?" I am probably the only man who puts strategy in a Saturday night foray to the sub shop. I line my cologne up carefully on the dresser, the Parisian designer bottle for cheesesteak, for pizza the cheaper, less subtle aromas, laying my clothes out to match each meal. She puts the change in my palm, a coin at a time, measuring the contours of the lines in my hands. I think I lost my sanity a long time ago on the way to buy a foot long and fries. The essence of Shango fires my red urge, longing to meld with a small, greasy apron that throws frozen steak portions with expertise. How could the heavens have wasted such youth on me and this corner sub shop and vagrants and the empty neon and after-hours streets? And the music from old Smokey Robinson 45s I play on my boombox the nights I want to serenade. Have you ever listed the extras on a cold cut with "Tracks of My Tears" or "Second That Emotion"? When the shop is closed some Sundays, I melt in the afternoon apparitions in the empty windows, the deserted counters, the cold ovens, the silence. There are blessings for noble spirits confined to ordinary lives, the dribble of an oba like me, and a great spirit like my sub-shop Oshun slicing pickles. There are blessings as we dazzle the ordinary universe, pervert the threadbare perceptions of doldrums with our elegant affair at night, our perfect love, me in an all-leather racing jacket and Gucci loafers. One night after work, I'll coax her and we'll pretend to be Marvin Gaye and Tammy Terrell in the parking lot. I'll caress her around the waist and spin her softly. A dark night sky laden with stars will crack. The moon will pour love's essence on the earth. Truth will overcome us on the voices of the Orishas. Ain't nothing like the real thing, baby. Or maybe you're all I need to get by. But most of all, the song the world needs to hear, "You Ain't Living Till You're Loving." I am probably the only man who sees the answer in a cheesesteak hoagie with all the fixings and fries, music from my boombox or the jukebox nearby, two almond eyes as deep as canyons over the counter, and my Gucci and Florsheim shoes doing a soft tap, the mania and danger of an insecure world hanging out like a florid design in the curtain of the night. And something in the African-American vernacular speech pattern from my childhood. house training. Every Saturday morning, I got up before everybody else, everybody except her. She always had one eye open. With my bucket and my rags, I cleaned the kitchen and the rest of the basement, scrubbing the yellow walls that are still yellow after 40 years. Scraping and rubbing, I got the black and white kitchen floor so bright the tiles shined when I put on the liquid wax. I had the bathroom looking like a picture. Mama was proud of me, and she'd talk with her sisters about how nice I did everything. I could cook, I could wash clothes and iron too. One day one of Mama's sisters said, "Michael sure will make some girl a mighty fine husband, mighty fine." Only God and Mama knew the truth. Mama was preparing me to be alone. And crossing cultural borders, I find myself in China, Taiwan. And so I was sitting in the monastery, having lunch in the monastery, as we do. I lived there for a short while, 5 years ago. And a teaching monk said to me, "Do you know who you are?" I said, "No, I have no idea, really." He said, "You're Dharmua." I said, "That's interesting. That's the monk from India who brought Buddhism to China and established it." I said, "That's very interesting. I thought I was from East Baltimore." Dharmua before the wall. After the first 1,000 days, fractures running like nameless lovers go full and vibrant in the afternoon. Tall women dancing down from clouds with trails of lace. He tips his ear to invisible sobs working in gray indentations, a woman's protestation or her grief. He shudders in his faded robe, his ears no longer tuned to a woman's voice. It was spring inside a house where the colors rippled under the curtains twirling. She brought him his cooked meat and a prophecy on a tray painted with gold birds. They made love past the rising of the sun. Now he clings to his body and the wall with one silk nerve cast in silence.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the writer Afa Michael Weaver. He's reading from his new book, The Plum Flower Dance. You have a nice voice.
Oh, thank you.
You really do. But, you know, because I was sitting here, you know, listening to your voice, and I was, you know, thinking of something to ask you, and I was thinking, am I hearing that because of his voice and the way you extend the words and the depth of your voice, or is it the lines of the poems? And I was getting confused, but I was happy anyway. but I want to ask you, you know, there's such tenderness in your work, and what comes up again and again is this appreciation for beauty and, you know, talking about phrases again, you know, full and bright and vibrant in the afternoon was one of the phrases you just read. And I thought, yeah, that's how I feel listening to your work. It just, there's a fullness and there's sort of like a, I don't know, not a vibration, but there's a... there's just a sense of joy coming out from your work. Is that something that you're trying to do, or just that comes from your choices, your choices of craft?
I'm trying to make it ascendant. I'm trying to make it such that it's not depressing. Mm-hmm. And I work with subject matter sometimes that is so raw that I'm trying to give it some joy. I am trying to give it some joy, mm-hmm. without it being too plastic or not real.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, what about that? If the material leads that way, if it is depressing, why not let it be that? You know.
I have done that. I have some things that are pretty depressing. And but it has gone that way. And I think sometimes when it's like that, you just have to let it be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. You were talking before about Kaveh Kanem, and I know there's probably a lot of listeners out there who don't know Cave Canem. Can you just tell us a little bit about it? And the idea of you being the first elder is such a great thing. Isn't it?
It is. I'm really proud of it. Cave Canem was founded by Toy Derricotte and Cornelius Eady in 1996. And in that first year, they invited me up to visit. Toy called me at home in Philadelphia where I was living. I said, okay, I'll come up and see what you guys are doing. And I said, oh, this is interesting. And then the next year, she called again and said, will you come up and teach? And so Elizabeth Alexander and I were the first invited faculty at Cave Canem. And after that, I was made the first elder. But Cave Canem is a retreat for African-American poets. And that extends to poets from the Caribbean and people of African descent, of course. And it's the first of its kind in America's literary history. And there's Marita Golden's fiction workshop, and but Cave Canem is the first of its kind. And it is something that African Americans have needed for a sense of community. And in the 13 years that it's been in existence, I think Toy has said there are 280 now Cave Canem fellows. So I travel around. I was in Washington, D.C., and a young poet comes up to me and says, I'm a Cave Canem person. I said, oh, you are, huh? Said, you're Afa. I said, yes, I'm Uncle Afa.
It connects you in a lot of different ways everywhere you go.
It does. On Facebook, everywhere. But it does. And I think that the energy and the work that's coming out of Cave Canem and things that are connected to it, because there are now retreats for Asian American and Hispanic American poets as well. And the energy of that is, it's lighting up the furnace of American poetry, I think. And it's sending these pulse waves of energy through the whole community.
It really is. So many books have come out of Cave Canem. How many are there?
I think about 150 books.
Yeah. That's just amazing. Since 1996, that's incredible. So it's a great thing.
It is. And one of our fellows is now a National Book Award finalist, Lyra Van Cleef Stefanon. And a poet who won the Cave Canem First Book Prize later won the Pulitzer, Natasha Trethewey.
Yeah. Wonderful. Okay. How about some more poems?
Sure. American Income. American Income actually earned me a pushcart prize, and I was happily surprised. Yeah. American Income. The survey says all groups can make more money if they lose weight, except black men. Men of other colors and women of all colors have more gold. But black men are the summary of weight, a lit thick thing on the scales, meters spinning until they ring off the end of the numbering of accumulation. How things grow heavy, fish on the ends of lines that become whales, then prehistoric sea life beyond all memories. The billion days of human hands working, doing all the labor one can imagine. Hands now, the population of cactus leaves on a papyrus moon, waiting for the fire. The notes from all their singing gone up into the salt breath of tears of children that dry, rise up to be the crystalline canopy of promises. The infinite gone fishing days with the apologies for not being able to love anymore. Gone down inside earth, somewhere where women make no more demands. Have fewer dreams of forever. These feet that marched and ran and got cut off. These hearts torn out of chests by nameless thieves. this thrashing until the chaff has gone out, and black men know the gold of being the dead center of things, where pain is the gateway to Jerusalem's body trees, places for meditation and howling, keeping the weeping heads of gods in their eyes. When I was in basic training many, many, many years ago, my sergeant was Stan Musial's nephew, great baseball player, and he let us box in the barracks, the southpaw. The fist is a hand that has made decisions. It has sat on a rock holding its thoughts over the edge of a lake, weighing this, weighing that. It has paced through woods in autumn, kicking leaves over matters philosophical and literary. It has thought. It has prayed to a God who knows hands and what hands can do in a malleable world. The 16-ounce boxing glove is a fist that never unfurls. Inside it, your hand is forced to conclusions. The glove magnifies the hand and softens it. It makes a fist that is both dangerous and heavy to haul and throw. It protects and threatens. It is like the black flash across space to the face, like a lightning bolt burnt with voltage. In the barracks, we fought for pride. A pound here, a pound there. We battled for the turf of striding out in the sun, smiling. I fought a boy from Kentucky who kept a picture of his Plymouth Roadrunner on his locker. I had nothing against him except he thought he could beat me. He hit me out of Louisville with a left. The eye makes stars when the fist pushes it into the skull socket. A fraction of a second and you are blind, grasping around for focus. I stood away, arched my back, flipped my head to rattle him with glove and grit from a right. He sat and said, "I've had it, no more. Hands can break bodies, bone on bone."
We have time for one more.
A meditation for my son, for Kala. When I go spinning, your care is given to the still nerves of reticent angels. When I cannot hold, my own heart drops away. Some sure finger from a faded portrait follows you in the thorn-filled curves of man's road. When I cannot dream, I pray in blind rooms that possible colors and bodies will converge around you, set you sailing over rocks, away from the soulless. When I am not whole, I entrust you to seraphim and their difficult dominion.
It's the poetry of Afa Michael Weaver. Thank you so much. It was great.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment News Weekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Ellen Wadey. Our sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in every Tuesday night at 7 for Prosody, 91.3 WYEP.